This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
At 9:30 a.m., join me, Linda Olson Osterlund, and my guest, Oregon attorney Tom Nelson, both a Muslim himself and an attorney for many others who have been targeted by the federal government. He has a unique perspective on the pressure this part of our community has been under since 9/11. That's this Thursday morning at 9:30 a.m., Oregon's Muslim community targeted by the federal government, right here on KBOO Community Radio.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland's Gay Yellow Pages, providing a resource guide of openly gay-friendly businesses, organizations, and services since 1996. New mobile applications available for iPhone and Android. For more information, you can visit pdxgyp.com.
This is Press Watch, a weekly counter-propaganda and left opinion program here on your people-supported free radio station, KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell. Join me for a brief peek behind the video veil of Monopoly media manipulation and an examination of the news you're not supposed to know. First headlines. This from Recombinomics.com. Tomorrow's week 3 CDC flu view will cite a pneumonia and influenza death rate of 9.8% due to 1,373 pneumonia and influenza deaths out of 13,973 deaths in the largest 122 cities in the United States, out of 13,000 cases, that is. As seen in a graph supplied by Recombinomics, the 9.8% is the highest since late 2003, when the rate briefly topped 10%. In week 2 of this season, the rate rose to 8.3%, raising concerns that week 4 will have a rate higher than seen in the above graph. So, in other words, the influenza is getting worse, and close to 10% of the people who have been officially diagnosed and hospitalized for it are dying. The 2304 season, Dr. Nyman writes in Recombinomics, was due to the emergence of an H3N2 strain, which produced a large number of deaths in those over 65, as well as a high number of pediatric deaths. The high death rate in children led to the requirement in the U.S. for reporting of lab-confirmed pediatric deaths. So, and he writes that tomorrow's flu view, which is a product of the CDC, will cite 8 more deaths to bring the official total to 37. That's above the 34 deaths in the entire 2011 and 12 season. However, additional cases not in the week 3 total indicate over 50 pediatric deaths have been reported this season. And that is the value of pulling up Recombinomics, because Dr. Nyman analyzes the news, the official news that comes out, which, although it is not intended to be deceptive, it actually can be, because you don't actually get counted as having the influenza until you go to the hospital and the hospital decides to test you specifically for it. And as you may know, that's kind of rare. So you have to take these figures with a grain of salt. Other news, as you may have heard or read, that North Korea is aiming its nuclear test at the United States. I see that phrasing over and over. What it really means is they said, okay, we admit that the reason we're testing nukes is because we're afraid of you. And if you pull up the KCNA website and look at their English publications, they do talk about that, but of course not in those terms. They say that North Korea will take steps for a physical counteraction to bolster the military capabilities for self-defense. This is a quote from their website, including the nuclear deterrence. They do use the word deterrence, both qualitatively and quantitatively, to cope with the ever more undisguised moves of the U.S. to apply sanctions and pressure against North Korea. And then there's a commie boilerplate, which goes partly like this. The Revolutionary Armed Forces of the DPRK will reliably defend the security and the sovereignty of the country and safeguard the regional peace and stability with the might of Sangun. They are full of the steadfast will to take a bold step to root out the source of provocations. The hostile forces seek to continue against the DPRK. No force on earth can block the great people proud of independence, powerful thanks to Sangun politics and advancing in unity, convinced of truth. you got to love commies, because nobody else will. This is Press Watch. You're listening to KBOO. And I'd like to get on with some more news you're not supposed to know. Specifically, I want to talk about economics. One of the news items reported on the corporate-held media is that the volatility index is down, which is supposed to be a good sign. Meaning that investors are confident and things are looking good for them to suck our blood in an ever-increasing way. However, I don't think that things are actually all that stable. And one of the reasons I think that is because of this interesting situation with the gold market. There's a lot of talk about gold on the net, and most of it takes the form of get yourself some gold because it's going to go up and you'll need it because the currency is going to collapse and all that sort of thing, which may or may not have any truth to it. And I tend to hedge that in my own mind with the fact that you can't eat gold. However, gold is important to rich people when they're not sure about the currency. So there's an article in Global Research by Washington's blog, and it starts off saying the Germans are demanding that the U.S. return all of the 374 tons of gold held by the Bank of France and 300 tons of the 1,500 tons of bullion held by the New York Federal Reserve. Some say that Germany is only demanding repatriation of its gold due to internal political pressures and that no other countries will do so. But the CEO, co-CEO of the gold financial firm PIMCO, says, in the first instance, it could translate into pressures on other countries to also repatriate part of their gold holdings. After all, if you can safely store your gold at home, a big if for some countries, no government would wish to be seen as one of the last to outsource all of this activity to foreign central banks. This is followed by a list of countries that are demanding gold. Romania has demanded for many years that Russia return its gold. Last year, Venezuela demanded the return of 90 tons of gold from the Bank of England. From Zero Hedge and Bloomberg, Ecuador's government wants the nation's banks to repatriate about one-third of their foreign holdings to support national growth, the head of Ecuador's tax agency said. Carlos Carrasco, director of the tax agency known as the SRI, said that Ecuador's lenders could repatriate about $1.7 billion worth and still fulfill obligations to international clients. Carrasco spoke at a congressional hearing in Quito on a government proposal to raise taxes on banks to finance cash subsidies to the South American nation's poor. Also, four members of the Swiss Parliament want Switzerland to reclaim its gold. A surprising statement, if I may depart from this text. I would have thought, if anywhere, Switzerland would have all of its gold. But anyway, some people in the Netherlands, Washington's blog also writes, want their gold back as well. Forbes notes that Iran and Libya have recently repatriated their gold. The Telegraph's lead economics writer, Ambrose Evans Pritchard, argues that the German repatriation demand shows that we're switching to a de facto gold standard. Central banks around the world bought more bullion last year in terms of tonnage than at any time in almost half a century. So again, departing from this this text, which again is from globalresearch.ca, pull it up for yourself, argument being made that all of this activity points to some real instability, and I think you'll be interested in some of the details. The Washington Accord, where Britain, Spain, Holland, South Africa, with Switzerland and others sold a chunk of their gold each year, already seems another era. That was the illusionary period when investors thought the euro would take its place as a twin pillar of a new G2 condominium alongside the dollar. That hope has faded. Central bank holdings of euro bonds have fallen back to where they were almost a decade ago, neither the euro nor the dollar can inspire full confidence, although for different reasons. The European Monetary Union, he writes, is a dysfunctional construct covering two incompatible economies, prone to lurching from crisis to crisis without a unified treasury to back it up. The dollar stands on a pyramid of debt. We all know that this debt will be inflated away over time for better or worse. The only real disagreement is over the speed. And then he talks about this new situation with gold as representing a sort of de facto third currency. And he writes, a third reserve currency is just what America needs. As Professor Michael Pettis from Beijing University has argued, holding the world's reserve currency is an exorbitant burden that the U.S. could do without. And he thinks that could create a partial gold standard. But he also writes, it's not confidence-inspiring that CNBC's senior editor argues that it doesn't matter whether or not the U.S. has a physical gold it claims to hold. In fact, many allege that the gold is gone. Cheviot Asset Management's Ned Leyland says that Fed and the Bank of England will never return gold to its foreign owners. And others allege that the gold has not been sold outright, but has been leased or encumbered so that the U.S. does not own it outright. $10 billion fund manager Eric Sprott writes in an article entitled, Do Western Central Banks Have Any Gold Left? If the Western Central Banks were indeed leasing out their physical reserves, they would not actually have to disclose the specific amounts of gold that leave their respective vaults. According to a document on the European Central Bank's website regarding the statistical treatment of Eurosystem's international reserves, current reporting guidelines do not require central banks to differentiate between gold owned outright versus gold lent out or swapped with another party. The document states that reversible transactions in gold do not have any effect on the level of monetary gold, regardless of the type of transaction, i.e. gold swaps, repos, deposits, or loans, in line with the recommendations contained in the IMF guidelines. Under current reporting guidelines, therefore, central banks are permitted to continue carrying the entry of physical gold on the balance sheet, even if they have swapped it or lent it out entirely. You can see this in the way Western central banks refer to their gold reserves. Indeed, it is now well documented that the Fed has leased out a large chunk of its gold reserves, and that big banks borrow gold from central banks and then to multiple parties. As such, it might not be entirely surprising that the Fed needs 7 years to give back Germany its 300 tons of gold, even though the Fed claims to hold 6,720 tons at its New York Federal Reserve Bank alone. And going back to PIMCO CEO Bill Gross, when the Fed now writes $85 billion of checks to buy treasuries and mortgages every month, they really have nothing in the bank to back them. Supposedly, they own a few billion dollars of gold certificates that represent a fairy tale claim on Fort Knox secret stash. But essentially, there's nothing there but trust. When a primary dealer such as J.P. Morgan or Bank of America sells its treasuries to the Fed, it gets a credit in its account with the Fed known as reserves. It can spend those reserves for something else, but then another bank gets a credit for its reserves and so on and on. The Fed has told its member banks, trust me, we will always honor your reserves, and so the banks do, and corporations and ordinary citizens trust the banks, and the beat goes on. As Sonny and Cher sang, $54 trillion of credit in the U.S. financial system based on trusting a central bank with nothing in the vault to back it up. Amazing. And if you've been listening to this program and to analyses of the banking system, you know that's how the banking system works. It's all on trust. There's really nothing to bank up, to back up the money that's lent out. When you use your credit card, you're creating money. It's a funny thing, but it's true. And so the question here is, does this move by Germany represent the beginning of sort of a run on the World Bank or a run on the dollar? And that's what I want to get to now. Because when I'm talking about a run on the dollar, I'm talking about destroying the currency that we all use. Destruction of the currency looks like hyperinflation. Hyperinflation looks like you can't pay your bills. And the other side of hyperinflation is what they call debt deflation. When you see that, when you see debt deflation, that is the banks worrying that you, faced with a situation in which you could sell, oh, let's say a motorcycle for the entire remaining balance of your house, will simply do so. They will get worthless paper, you will get the house, and they won't be able to screw you out of your earnings for the next 30 years. That frightens the hell out of them. And this is what this is all about. And I suspect that this writer, who writes anonymously as Washington's blog, is onto something, because really, when you get right down to it, that's a hell of a lot of gold when you're talking about major percentages and tons of gold, and the fact that that gold isn't nearly enough to cover currencies in the first place, it's kind of a desperate action. So returning to that text, the gold repatriation is without doubt related to currency. As Forbes notes, officials at the Bundesbank acknowledge the move is preemptive in case a currency crisis hits the European Monetary Union. No, we have no intention to sell gold, a Bundesbank spokesman said on the phone Wednesday. The relocation is in case of a currency crisis. Reggie Middleton thinks, whoever the hell he is, that Germany's demand for gold is part of its currency war. And others say the Fed had plans to grab Germany's gold. One writer, Jim Rickards, has outlined possible plans by the Federal Reserve to commandeer Germany's and all foreign depositors of sovereign gold at the New York Federal Reserve in the event of a dollar and monetary crisis, leading to intensified currency wars and the nuclear option of a drastic upward revision of the price of gold and return to a quasi-gold standard contemplated by embattled central banks to prevent debt deflation. See, they want to get you on that. There's no way. I mean, when you get down to what money is about, it's about power, isn't it? It's about the power to get goods and services and food and all the stuff that you want and need without question, simply by presenting ephemera. I mean, you could say by presenting printed pieces of paper, which is ephemeral enough, but these days it's mostly not even that. It's imaginary. It's configurations of electrons, isn't it? What happens when the trust is gone? Well, what I'm saying is I'm watching the trust go away. And I would say that the trust is going away in large part because the Glass-Steagall Act, which was in place to prevent a major financial crisis, was wiped out under the Clinton administration. And because the Dodd-Frank Act was a silly Band-Aid over a major wound and didn't fix the situation, and because the derivatives gambling that I've pounded on week after week is still hanging over the head of the entire economy. In short, because the system is utterly corrupt. And it's unstable, and therefore it will fall at some point. But getting back to the specifics. Back in the mid-1920s, this is from the Telegraph's James Delling poll by way of Washington's blog, the head of the German Central Bank, Mr. Schacht, went to New York to see Germany's gold. And departing from the text, you may recall that Germany had a hell of a hyperinflation crisis in the 20s. However, the New York Fed officials were unable to find the pallet of Germany's gold bullion. The chairman of the Federal Reserve, Benjamin Strong, was mortified, but to put him at ease, Herr Schacht turned to him and said, "Never mind, I believe you when you say the gold is there. Even if you weren't, you are good for its replacement." But that was then, and this is now, in the eyes of the Germans, and who can blame them? America has lost, America has lost its mojo. I should say that more often. America has lost its mojo to such a degree that it can no longer be trusted to honor its debts, even in the unlikely event that it were financially capable of doing so, which is why, following the footsteps of Venezuela's Hugo Chavez, Germany is repatriating its gold from the U.S. Federal Reserve. It will now be stored in Frankfurt. Things may look calm on the surface, he writes, but this latest move by the Bundesbank gives us a pretty good indication that beneath the surface that serene-seeming swan is paddling for dear life. Every few months, there is a discussion regarding what China is planning to do with the gold they both mine and import every year, with many believing they are hoarding the metal as an insurance against the billions of U.S. Treasury bonds, notes, and bills that they hold. Many believe that they will issue some kind of gold-backed currency in the short term and dump its $1 trillion worth of U.S. Treasury securities. Whilst at the moment the U.S. seems to take their monopoly currency for granted, should the Chinese or anyone else behave in such a manner, the U.S. will need to respond, most likely with gold, which on its own it does not have enough of. Anyone who thinks this isn't going to happen eventually should read a book called How an Economy Grows and Why It Crashes by Peter Schiff, he writes. And here's a postscript. Michael Rivero thinks that the war in Mali is connected. Mali is one of the world's largest gold producers. Together with neighboring Ghana, they account for 7-8% of world gold output. That makes them a rich prize for nations desperate for real physical gold. And departing from this text, I've also read that the gold production in Mali is from very backwards technology, and they could produce a great deal more. So that put all together means there's a hell of a lot of gold in Mali. People seem to be really wanting gold. Mali's got a hell of a lot of gold. Let's see, what's happening in Mali? Oh. So even as Germany, returning to the text, started demanding their gold back from the Bank of France and the New York Federal Reserve, France, aided by the U.S., decided to invade Mali to fight the Islamists working for Al-Qaeda. Of course, Islamist has become the catch-all label for people who need to get killed to get them out of the way of the path of riches. And the people being bombed by France, aided by the U.S., are not Al-Qaeda, but Tawariqs, who have been fighting for their independence for 150 years, long before the CIA created Al-Qaeda. Left to themselves, the Tawariqs could sell gold to whoever they wanted for whatever they want. And right now, China can outbid the U.S. and France. So there you have it. Now, I want to back this up further, talking about the currency crisis, talking about the shuffling of gold, indicating that currency crisis. This article by Michael Kling on Money News. The Chinese yuan is on track to become a global currency and could even displace the U.S. dollar as the world's reserve currency, experts say. China is opening its financial markets to foreign investors and encouraging its currency to be used more in international trade. CNBC reports countries that have substantial trade with China, such as Australia, are among the first to base their trade settlements on the yuan, also called the renminbi, since it lowers their transaction costs. International payments on the yuan jumped 24% in November from October, reaching a record 0.56% of the global total. That's from CNBC, citing data from SWIFT. China's gradual move to let the yuan appreciate and become more of a free market currency is another sign it's advocating the yuan as a global currency. Engineer just kindly told me that someone was calling in, which means that this person has memorized the phone number. And I think I would like to discuss this more generally, so I'll go ahead and talk to James. But first, if you would like to call in with your comments about the world financial situation, the currency, hyperinflation, and your prospects, do call in 503-231-8187. That's 503, which is the local area code, then 231-8187. Hi, James. What's up?
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
You know, I'm old enough to remember when we, actually before we got rid of Glass-Steagall, we had usury laws. But when credit cards first came out, you know, actually, it wasn't too bad of a deal. But after that, they, you know, it used to be you could send in your payment, and if it had a postmark date, that's what the credit card companies had to use. But then they got rid of that rule, and they could set their own date as far as when it arrived, and then they could charge you a fee for a late payment. And then it got to be so that even after that, if your payment came in late, they not only would increase the rate on whatever your future borrowing was, but also go back to whatever you balance you already had and add interest, charge the interest rate on that.
That's a good point. And then they, of course, adding on to that, as you know, they also use those penalties and the fine print to then jack up your interest on that first missed payment to 21 to 23% compounded, which is a usurious rate. And that is how they
One other thing, you know, you might want to talk about the U.S. dollar being used as a base currency for oil transactions and how that plays into the whole story of Iraq and Libya. Because what they wanted to do was develop their own monetary system to be the U.S. to be the oil-based currency.
Good point. And Iran also got all kinds of alarm directed its way when it started talking about its own oil bourse or its own oil market. Well, thank you very much for your call, James.
Okay, thank you.
Number to call, 503-231-8187. I want to add also about the credit cards that when they are unable to get their payments, they swiftly sell it on the secondary and tertiary markets, in other words, to the bottom feeders. And one thing I've noticed about this, and I would like to see this brought into the courts, and I would like to get some legal opinion on it, is that there are laws regarding the transference of debt. In other words, you can't just go to someone and say, you need to pay me the amount that you told Bill you were going to pay him. Because Bill has to go and transfer that debt officially and has to pay a fee. Otherwise, anyone with information can claim that you owe them a debt. Now, this is exactly what the credit card companies, or rather the bottom feeders that the credit card companies sell to, are doing. They are not bothering to officially register and pay the tax, pay the fee to transfer their debts. Therefore, in my opinion, which is certainly not a legal opinion, but I deeply suspect this could be brought out legally, the bottom feeders are going to you saying, with the weight of the law, that you must pay us, and they will go to court, and they will sue you, and they will get your money by garnishing your wages, et cetera, and yet they do not intend to and have not obeyed the law. And so I think that it might be possible to go into a court when you are sued and say, these people do not, I do not owe a debt to these people. Where was it registered? In what court was the transference of the debt registered? I have attempted to do this for an approximately $8,000 debt that I owed to Washington Mutual, and they gave up. They would not go to court with me, which may mean that the amount was too small for them to bother with it in any case, or I guess there's an outside possibility that they took my thunderings as good and decided not to raise that question in court. I think that question definitely needs to be raised. Number to call, 503-231-8187, and Jack is on the air.
Yeah, glad you're talking about this stuff with the gold today. People got so excited about this Arab Spring, and they get so excited about the Islamic fundamentalism and all the infighting with factions and all this, and want to point to that as the reasons for instability in the Middle East, et cetera, and so on. Before Gaddafi was targeted and taken out, he actually was preparing to launch the African gold dinar, and it was moving along, and the plan was to establish a real gold-based, solidly gold-based African fiat currency.
Ooh, that's what you call messing with the big dogs.
Yeah, right. That was his crossing the line. His crossing the line had nothing to do with all this ginned-up agitprop about bombing his own people, et cetera. So, the story about all of that is the real story about all of that can be found easily. But when it came to Saddam, when he priced his oil in euros, that was his death knell. And you're right to point out the Iranian oil burst. It's all about oil. It's all about resources and finance, and the global finance oligarchy has literally hijacked. NATO is their hit team, and they will just sick them on whomever needs to be taken out.
Right on. Another way to say it is, it's all about the billionaires.
That's right.
Thanks very much for your call. Okay, and getting close to the end of the program here, so I just want to say that don't let this alarm you, because what you really need is not gold. You can't afford gold anyway, now can you? You need community. If it should come about that the dollar is weakened so greatly that you can't even get groceries, what would you do? Think about that. I can tell you in advance what you'll do if you got any sense, and it's not hole up in your house with a gun and some gold coins. It's work your community, which you should be doing right now. What you grow in your garden is yours. What you and your friends grow together in your gardens with your chickens is collectively yours. Think about that. It is through collective action that we can get not only get through a crisis that is threatened here, but move forward to a better society, I think, using the crisis to our own ends. That's always been my game with that. So you've been listening to Press Watch. Stay tuned for more of the Incomparable Radio Zine on KBOO Portland.
What exactly brought tech millionaire John McAfee to Portland? Find out this Thursday morning at 11:30 on Words and Pictures.
He's here in Portland writing a graphic novel, which I couldn't be happier about.
We'll be sitting down with John McAfee and with local comics artist Chad Esley.
While I was in my Guatemalan jail, I spoke to him and said, of all things I would like to do right now is have a cup of coffee with you.
They'll tell us about their adventures in Belize and about their upcoming projects here in Portland. That's this Thursday, 11:30 a.m. to noon, a special Words and Pictures interview here on KBOO.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Kurt Lauer, a real estate broker with Oregon Realty Company, helping homeowners and home buyers to buy, sell, upgrade, or downsize while keeping your budget in mind. Kurt Lauer can be reached at 503-901-5878 or by email to KURTLAUER at OregonRealty.com.
Good morning, and thank you for tuning in to A Deeper Look this cold, wet winter morning. I'm Linda Olson-Osterlin, your host. If you're living in the Portland area, you cannot have missed the ongoing trial of Mohammed Mohammed in the downtown federal courthouse. Mohammed is accused of being a terrorist who attempted to set off a bomb at Portland's Christmas tree lighting ceremony in 2010. The bomb was a phony provided by Mohammed's FBI handler, and no one was ever in danger. Only 17 when he was first approached by federal agents who then hand-walked him through the plot, Mohammed's attorneys call it a case of entrapment. Tune in. I want to remind everybody that KBOO's Evening News at 5 p.m. has been having live coverage by reporter Joe Meyer. So do tune in the evening at 5 p.m. Monday through Friday to stay up on what's happening in the courthouse. But this is only the most recent of high-profile cases alleging terrorism to be held here in Portland. From afar, you might think this rainy city we live in is just a hotbed of terrorist, conspiracy going on at any moment. There are foreign terrorists who are out to attack us. A more accurate picture of us is a post-9/11 Muslim community that finds itself subjected to constant scrutiny and selective intimidation and harassment by the federal government. To